The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Prep to Pro NBA Draft Podcast. My name is Ben Pfeiffer, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Max Carlin. Max, how's it going?
I'm doing all right, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing all right as well. I'm excited to get part two of our final podcast before the NBA Draft going. In part one, we discussed our general philosophies, began to discuss some general ideas and concepts surrounding the 2020 NBA draft, and we're going to continue to do that and get more in depth into the draft and the players itself as we continue here.
The wait is finally over. Football's in full effect. With many teams strutting their stuff, you might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Yeah, same note at the top. We're recording this on Friday, November 13th. So if any big transactions happen, we are unaware, and check out the live broadcast on Wednesday during the draft. Yeah. Okay, Ben, so in light of the strengths and weaknesses that we discussed in part one, who would you say benefits from this structure of this year's draft?
I think, first of all, I think we talk about good teams. We talked about the main strength of this draft being high-level complementary talents, prospects that scale up to rosters with ball-dominant creators and high-end stars, and good teams. Good teams who need these last few scalable pieces are going to benefit greatly. And that couples with, kind of everyone in like the mid first. I think these two go hand in hand, as there just are a lot of good teams in that mid first, range. From like, as early as 10, you have Phoenix and you have New Orleans with high end stars. You have Portland, and then you have Boston and Brooklyn and Dallas and Miami. You have teams that, have these franchise changing stars that can lead you to a title, but, especially as you go up that list, lack the high-end complementary talent. So this is where prospects like Tyrese Maxey and Patrick Williams and Cole Anthony, who are falling down boards for whatever reason, are going to have a chance to make a real impact, because they're falling into a context where they're likely to hit a high-end outcome. Because again, we talked about this, like someone like Maxey wouldn't be overextended and asked to do primary creation if he landed on a team like New Orleans or Phoenix or Boston. Whereas, if he landed on a team like Charlotte or like Cleveland or something, then he probably would be asked to do more primary creation higher in the draft. So those are like, that's the main beneficiary to me of the glut of complementary talent, is these good teams picking in the mid first range are going to have some real values and, potentially land some real pieces that can move them towards title contention in the near future.
Yeah, I think that tying in with that, teams that are very self-aware, I think are going to benefit a lot, because you have so many guys that are so context dependent. So if you're a team that is very confident in your strength and conditioning program, like Isaiah Joe should be very high for you, and almost certainly higher than he will actually go, and that therefore represents a pretty strong value opportunity for you. You know, if you're a team that has a very motion heavy offense with a jumbo initiator who you know can get Tyrell Terry involved as a movement shooter, again, he's going to be more valuable to you than to other teams, and possibly more valuable than what it's going to cost to get him. You know, if you're a team that has confidence in your shooting development, Josh Green is going to be more valuable to you. So teams that have a really good understanding of their organizational competencies are going to be at a huge advantage in a draft that is so, so context dependent. And just like teams that are really well equipped with a developmental plan for these guys are going to have like a huge leg up on other teams.
Yeah, I think it's key with this draft is you just have to go in with a plan for a lot of these prospects. I mean, the concept of a plug-and-play prospect is always overused and misused, but even in this draft, less so. Like prospects like Alexei Pokusevski and Tyrese Halliburton, like you said, and Josh Green and Tyrell Terry and Isaiah Joe, and they're not an Aaron Nesmith. Like, they're not plug-and-play. You have to have plans not only for their deployment, but for their development as well. So again, like good, smart teams, you know, I mean, good, smart teams always stand to benefit from taking advantage of less competent front offices, but especially in this draft when there just isn't as much talent in general, and the talent that there is needs specific contexts and usages to be maximized.
So moving on to, strategy for approaching this draft, where do you think the value lies, in terms of taking advantage of it seems what perceptions of this class are?
I think the first thing that you have to mention is trading down, which is always mentioned with this draft, especially. The issue with trading down is that if every team is looking to trade down, then it's hard to find a partner to move up. But there are always teams for reasons looking to move up, you know, in three-team trades with stars involved. So, you know, that's what we talked about for teams, a team like Golden State, who has their star power in place pretty comfortably, but really lacks complementary talent and ancillary pieces. Taking someone like Adeni Avdija at 2 overall, while he's an excellent fit for their roster and for what they need, is probably not good value, at least by my evaluation of him as a prospect. Some might disagree with that, but by my evaluation, that's a poor pick just because he doesn't generate the impact and the value that a number two pick does. But if you can, you know, take advantage of a team who really likes a player or wants a certain archetype and is willing to trade up for them, you know, a team like the Warriors can move back into like the 7-8-9 range. And even if Denny falls out, they can get a prospect like Patrick Williams or maybe Devin Vassell, who fits that complementary wing forward role really swimmingly. So that's kind of the main, I think, point that has to be mentioned, is that teams who can trade down like from the top, good teams that, you know, going hand in hand with what we just talked about, good teams that need those complementary pieces, taking advantage of maybe some bad teams that need some of the more scarce options in this draft, like a LaMelo Ball really, or, you know, some teams will perceive James Wiseman or Obi Toppin as this, you know, franchise changing piece, or even Tyrese Halliburton to some teams. The teams that understand what these prospects are and can, you know, use trades effectively are going to have a big advantage.
On the flip side, I think that there might actually be value in trading up, given how many teams seem to want to trade back. Especially, again, if you're a team that's well equipped to extract value out of someone that might be less valuable in other contexts. Like, I wouldn't trade up for Tyrese Halliburton, but I could certainly see a case for a hypothetical perfect situation in which you would do that, and it would be worthwhile. I mean, if you're the Celtics, like trading up for Onyeka Okongwu as a guy who's a ceiling raising big who can maintain his value into high leverage situations, definitely makes sense. So I think that there's a lot of potential for that if everyone wants to trade back, that the price to trade up will actually be reasonable for once. You know, if you could trade up in this draft, mimicking that Dario trade from last year and kind of avoid giving up future picks, because I would not give up future picks in a trade up, at least not ones that project to be good.
Yeah, I mean, especially just given the quality of the next couple drafts.
Exactly. Do not give up first round future first in this draft that project to be good. A heavily protected one that by a very good team, I don't have much of a problem with. But do not put yourself in a situation where you're going to miss out on Cade or BJ Boston or Zaire Williams, Evan Mobley, or the year after AJ Griffin, Paolo, Chet. Don't do that. So yeah, I think that there very well may actually be value in trading up. Careful as always with trading.
I mean, even a couple spots, like we talked about with like the Warriors, like your idea from our mailbag of like a Warriors Bulls trade where the Bulls give up like a solid complimentary piece in Thad Young and like a second rounder to move up and, you know, get a guy like maybe they can land LaMelo, who would be really, you know, really additive and helpful for that team. There's definitely some value in that. Like if you can, you know, get trade up for cheaper than you'd normally be trade up with teams being so desperate to move down and out if they're just so unenthused with the talent at the top.
Yeah. So otherwise the thing that we've addressed a few times already, the idea of waiting on guards, I think makes a lot of sense. I check out best plays again, keep plugging that, cause I think it's very relevant to the idea of thinking about a board. I would certainly invest in Malachi Flynn, in that late first range, but otherwise definitely want to be waiting on guard, not going to pay significantly more for Nico Mannion than Cassius Winston or Tyrell Terry or whatever it may be.
And then again, I mean, on the flip side, like maybe it's also worth trying to trade up for a wing like Isaac Okoro or Devin Vassell if they slip a little bit, because that is just such a scarce, scarce archetype of player that there just are almost none in this draft. I mean, like we say, there's Okoro and Vassell and like Josh Green for defensive wings. So maybe if a good team can create a trade up without giving up too much in terms of future assets, that could be a useful thing as well.
All right. Should we move on to providing some context with drafts, past and future?
Yeah. Let's do that. So I think this draft, as we've kind of talked about, is, you know, a weak draft by every standard. I think we've talked about the strengths and weaknesses partly on this and last episode, but just with a lack of high end talent, that this draft pales in comparison to a lot. I think the easy place to start is comparing it to last year, to 2019, where it was 2019 was also kind of labeled as a weaker draft by many, but the saving grace of 2019 was that there was Zion Williamson there, who is a generational prospect and was, you know, flawed but incredibly good as a rookie in his limited time. And, you know, looks like he has that genuine franchise-changing ceiling, which is huge, because that, you know, that this the value of that number one pick is so much stronger than like any asset related to this draft. And that, you know, has implications for team building and how other teams trade and navigate the draft. And even beyond that, in 2019, I think there are more, there are plenty of valuable complementary pieces. Like there isn't really like a Brandon Clark or Grant Williams in this draft. I mean, you have like your prototype, like Xavier Tillman, but I think he's like a level, like quite a bit below, you know, Clark or Williams, the prospect. As you even accounted for someone like John Morant, who kind of broke out as a rookie. I think I and you and quite a few other people probably overlooked a little bit, but he was like a genuine guard with star tools, beyond like the feel and playmaking. He has the advantage creation, and the tools to apply that. So just definitely a weaker draft than 2019 as a starting point.
Yeah. And I mean, addressing future drafts, it's far weaker than, 2021, because 2021 has that one elite franchise-changing talent in Cade Cunningham. It has then a bunch of worthwhile creator bets after that. And I think that that's definitely a much more normal structure of a high-end portion of a draft. Whereas this year, yeah, the just lack of top end talent is abnormal and not what you would expect from a draft, not what you would hope for from a draft. So definitely sandwiched in between far superior drafts, even though 2019 itself had flaws.
Yeah, and I think that definitely does play in a little bit for some teams. Like we've talked about the strategy for a team like the Knicks, who probably aren't going to be in a place to get that. You know, they landed out of the range of someone like LaMelo and could land Killian Hayes, but there's also a chance he goes ahead. In that case, you know, it might be best for a team like the Knicks, who desperately need that franchise-changing star, to just load up on complimentary pieces and hope they're, you know, expect to be bad enough next year to where they can, you know, hopefully get lucky and land a Cade Cunningham or get, you know, land a Brandon Boston or Jonathan Kuminga or like swing for a Jalen Green or Zaire Williams or one of the many like really high level prospects next year. I mean, and that like does extend to, you know, the year after where there's AJ Griffin and Paolo Banchero, but who are, you know, prospects who can be really high level wing creators and big creators. So yeah, I mean, just I think understanding that like this draft is really going to be about getting complementary pieces. Like that's the name of this draft for most teams, I think, is getting the ancillary pieces and the complementary pieces that set you up for the future, even if those, you know, aren't the pieces that most, you know, don't push you in the right direction most strongly, but pieces that you're going to need for the future, even if they don't help you very much right now.
Yeah, it's getting ceiling raising guys who aren't going to necessarily raise the floor that much, but aren't going to restrict the ceiling. Like, you know, maybe Anthony Edwards is a good enough self-creator that he lifts you to 40 wins or something like that. But, you know, if his decision-making and defense are so detrimental that they're constraining your ceiling, you know, maybe it's better to opt for someone who's not going to get you those 40 wins. But once you have BJ Boston in place, this guy's going to get you from, you know, 47 to 52 or something like that, you know, a much more meaningful full increase in contention. How do you think that the sort of mid first complimentary guys compare to last year's? Because there were a bunch of interesting guys in that range too last year. I think what last year had that this year doesn't have is a couple of guys more in that mid first, like late lottery range, who had some more like fringy creator upside. I think that there were, you know, you had like Kevin Porter Jr.
and like Talen Horton Tucker.
Yeah, you had that sort
yeah,
of guy.
I think, yeah, it's just like a different, and I think they're also more useful bigs as well. Just in that range, I mean, Jackson Hayes, Goga Bitadze, and then we already mentioned, you know, Grant Williams and Brandon Clark, Jonte Porter, of course, injuries, Bol Bol, even in that range. Like there were a lot of useful bigs, even if, again, like beyond Zion, not that star big man, but it just like in the top 20 lottery range alone, there were a lot of useful bigs. I think the complementary guard depth is certainly much more of a strength this year. As I think John Morant has shown that he's more than that in his rookie year. And smart people, I think there were some smart people who did identify that at the time. But even then, like, you know, I think we have this group like Tyrese Maxey, Maxey being the best one to me, and even Cole Anthony and Kyra Lewis. I prefer all of those to someone like Kobe White for sure. I know you were a Garland guy. I wasn't. So, I mean, I prefer them to like someone like Garland. But yeah, I mean, that's a strength. And I think that's an important strength. Cause you know, it's hard to get small players who aren't primaries on the floor. Yes. But with more and more big creators, and that's just the way the league is trending, you know, especially even if you look down at these future classes with all of these big creator prospects, that's just the way the league is going. So there's going to be a room for these small creators with shooting and off the catch attacking and finishing to succeed. And I think that's the main strength that this class that it doesn't have. But again, it just lacks really in like the compliment. And like, I think what's more important maybe is really useful playoff bigs and then complimentary wings. Like obviously Culver had, you know, we've talked about Culver on this podcast, but I still have some belief in him as a complimentary wing. Cam Reddish as well, I think was quite good this year. So yeah, I mean, just different strength in terms of complimentary players. I think generally less of them. Yeah, just the guards is the big difference.
Do How do you feel about this year's wings in comparison to last year?
I think the wings at the top this year, actually, I think I'd be pretty similarly, honestly. Like, as prospects, like Okoro, I think I probably like a little less than Culver, but with hindsight, I think I'd prefer Okoro. Yeah, and like Vassell, I definitely preferred to like Reddish and Hunter coming out. That's, I think, kind of pretty similar in terms of like top end wings, because like, at least as prospects, like I said, Culver, I think I liked a lot. Pretty lukewarm on Reddish and was not a fan of Hunter coming in. Even someone like Romeo Langford, who I liked a decent bit. So,
yeah, I think I like this year's wings better. Obviously, I guess outside of Culver, because I was too high on him. But comparing, you know, Okoro, Vassell, to that like Romeo,
Hunter, Reddish.
Well, yeah, Hunter, I just didn't like at all.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But the Hunter Reddish group, I mean, sorry, the Hunter, the Langford Reddish group of sort of 10 to 20 wings that I kind of liked. I think I definitely prefer Okoro and Vassell.
Yeah. No, for sure.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, there aren't that many wings, but the best of the class, I think, are a little bit better.
And I think there's never, like most, almost no classes has, like, a lot of complimentary, like, really good wings. Which I think is illustrative of how scarce good wings are in the league and why it's so important to, you know, take the good ones high and swing on the ones that could become something late over, you know, guards or less valuable bigs.
Yeah, the lack of bigs this year is really striking when you think about, even, I mean, last year, which wasn't, you know, Zion's his own thing. What traditional bigs, they weren't that exceptional, but there were some guys. And then, I mean, you go a year before, you've got Wendell, Ayton, JJJ, Bagley, even. Like, it's really kind of striking how poor this big man class is this year.
Yeah, I mean, I guess another place where, like, this draft kind of, the 2020 draft kind of, you know, has an upper hand is like the complimentary four with Patrick Williams, Danny Avdija, I guess kind of Poku if you look at him like that. Like, I mean, last year there was, you know, obviously like you said, Zion's his own beast, but well, there wasn't really much in terms of like these like three and rim protection complimentary fours. I mean,
you throw Clark, but he's his own weird.
Yeah, I mean, I would just call Clark something else. Like, he's his own unique talent. I mean, there's Chuma Okeke, who I liked a lot coming out, but still hasn't played an NBA minute because of injury concerns. I mean, and then as you go down, like there's like Nasir Little, who's like very flawed, very flawed. Like, I mean, there just really aren't any of. I mean, there's like KZ Akpala, who's just like not good, that went high. And like, oh, PJ Washington, I guess, was like the...
Yeah, PJ is the one. PJ is the...
He's the really good one, who's probably better than any of the ones this year, I think.
PJ and Grant Williams are like the modern, like, kind of inside-out fours from last year.
Yeah, but I still view them a little differently to, like, Pat Will and
I think PJ is honestly kind of similar.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. I mean, PJ, I think, is probably the best one, like, compared to, like, Pat Will and Denny. I mean, Grant, too.
Yes. I think PJ's better than those guys.
Yeah, I think so as well.
And similar... I don't know exactly where Grant figures in, but he's different because he's much more biggie.
I just thought of Grant and Clark in kind of a different light than those two guys, because they're just less straight fours, like, to me, than, you know, Pat Will or Denny.
All right, should we get started with the actual tiers now?
Honestly, like, one last note. I think, like, again, like we talked about, like, second round depth, like, like, even like interesting, like, wingy kind of gambles. Like, I think there were definitely more last year as well. Like, you talk about guys like, I don't know, like wings and useful bigs, like even like Nick Claxton, like Cody Martin, like Alan Smilegeach, and even as you go down, like Isaiah Roby, Terrence Mann, Iggy Brazdeikis. Like, I think there were just a lot more of like interesting second round rotation bets that, you know, that were just more useful.
Yeah, I think that there were some more second round guys that I felt passionately about. And maybe that was just a case of like, there were guys that I thought were kind of first that fell, and I'm misremembering it, but I think that there were more second rounders that I would kind of fight
for. I'm not talking about like THT or someone who like slid all the way. I'm talking about like genuine like guys who I thought were second rounders, like Martin and Servetus or like like I think there were just more interesting, you know, rotation bets, and even going like Keldon Johnson, who like seems to have turned into something who I wasn't a big fan of. These guys were, they're just more of them last year.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case.
The wait is finally over. Football's in full effect. With many teams strutting their stuff, you might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Support for the Prep to Pro NBA Draft podcast comes from Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Jingle balls to the walls, fellas. Listen up. Untrimmed pubes are a thing of the past. It's time to gear up and get yourself the gift of shaving this holiday season. I am talking about the Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0. The Lawnmower 3.0 comes inside their brand new Perfect Package 3.0, which makes for the perfect gift this holiday season. It's literally everything you need to keep trimmed, cut free, and smelling nice down there. The Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0 also includes the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why are you not putting it on the smelliest part of your body? And yes, your balls stink. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code ARMCHAIR at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code ARMCHAIR. Clean up your nuts and make Santa proud this year.
All right, should we do these tiers now?
Let's do it.
Yeah, so we're not going to go through every single player. We both have 100 guys ranked. That would take many, many hours. We don't have that kind of time, and I would assume that none of the listeners have that kind of time. We're going to go through each of our tiers, kind of talk about what they mean, what we expect from them. I have also kind of what I would invest draft capital wise in those tiers. We will be posting these boards to Twitter, though. I would assume we can link them in the.
Yeah, I'm going to have like. I've, you know, because I found time to like do like somewhat of a write-up, so I'll have that.
Okay.
But
yeah, so I won't have a write-up, but we'll have a link to our boards in the show notes. You can find them on Twitter also. I'll probably might pin them. I don't know. We'll see.
I'll probably end up pinning mine before the draft, but
they'll be pretty easy to find. Check those out. And then I think that this, I would sort of view this as the companion piece to those boards. Hopefully, we're not going to do in-depth breakdowns of every player, but give you an idea of what the tier means.
I mean, we've done in-depth breakdowns of probably every prospect in this class twice over. Without a doubt. I mean, the pods are all time-stamped. So, and you know, if you want to look for an in-depth prospect, I mean, feel free to shoot us a message on Twitter, and we can help you find that, you know, that breakdown of a certain prospect. But this is going to be a more general overview of tiers and what they mean, and some prospects that are illustrative of the tiers that they fall in.
Yeah, but if you just go through the show notes yourself, you'll find that we've talked about all of these guys many, many, many times. That is what happens when you have a 17-month draft cycle.
17 months.
Yeah,
that's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's not great. All right, Ben, what is your first tier?
My first tier I'll just say it's two guys. It's LaMelo Ball and Killian Hayes, defined as flawed creators, slash, I guess, Killian, like, also, like, more complimentary, I think. Just, like, again, as we talked about, these creators, these franchise-changing stars who drive championship-level offense are what you want at the top of the draft, and this draft has none of those. But LaMelo and Killian, to me, are the two best bets to do that. LaMelo first, LaMelo, I think, more so, just because of the high-end handle and the playmaking genius. And I think the touch providing shooting upside. And, you know, if he improves the core strength and his frame in general, that unlocks a lot. But again, just still, like even that being said, I have big concerns about his scoring efficiency being good enough to really drive offense. But the passing, I think, is so legit. There's always going to be value. And Killian, just more worries about, I do worry about volume, like you said. Worry about, yes, he has, the strength and the change of direction and the craft. But against the highest level of defenses, I think his lack of athletic tools could definitely, and his lack of a complex handle could definitely hinder him. But Killian also, I think, has, first of all, the All-NBA guard defense and, the playmaking. And I think can definitely learn a playoff ball to become an elite secondary guard. So that's my first tier. What about you, Max?
My first tier is a tier 1A of flawed creators, which is Killian, LaMelo, and Ant. Yeah, I think that those guys are kind of at their high ends would be the 1B on a contending team. So you would need another guy who is approximately as good and ideally a little bit more impactful. I'm totally fine taking any of these three guys in the top three of this year's draft. I think that would be pretty worthwhile. So yeah, LaMelo, I have just concerns about scoring efficiency ever being there for himself. We'll see what happens with his core strength and balance, how that impacts his ability to finish, to take contact at the rim, to be efficient as a jump shooter. I think that's where a lot of his mechanical issues as a jump shooter stem from. So we'll see if he can address that and reach a level of efficiency as a scorer that I think is necessary to really be that sort of heliocentric offensive player. Defensively, he's a guy that I think probably limits you by virtue of his on-ball defense, which I think will always be a problem from an effort standpoint, strength, just technique and navigating screens. Off the ball, yes, he can play make, but I think he makes a lot of bad gambles. I still think he has a ton of issues with positioning. Like, a lot of his really good rotations are awesome. Like, it's cool that he gets there, has the mobility to do it after he sees it, but like, they would not really be necessary if he were just better positioned. So I think he's got a long way to go in terms of learning how to play NBA defense. I see the argument that's a source of upside for him, but I'm a little skeptical for sure. And then Killian, trust him less to consistently create advantages. Will probably need to be in an offense that a lot of different guys are getting ball handling looks, and he can get the ball in situations where he's already attacking somewhat of a tilted defense, but he still, I think, has significant equity to just handle out of pick and roll himself. You might need a little bit more trickery to set the floor up for him to, say, get going to his left as opposed to his right. But, brilliant pick and roll player, incredibly smart, high value off and on ball defender. I think kind of the perfect 1B alongside another guy who can really self-create. Killian can be the guy who's orchestrating everything. And he would especially benefit from not being stuck with the best perimeter defender on the other team if you need someone to be latched onto to another guard or wing. I think that would benefit him a lot.
Yeah.
And I guess we should address
Ant. I was going to say, yeah, we should address, I think you, Ant is in my second tier, which we'll get to in a second, but he's in your 1A. I don't have a 1A or a 1B. I just have what? I have tier gaps later down, but not for tier one. So why don't you get into Ant and why he makes your tier one?
Sure. So I think that Ant is kind of the compliment you'd want to Killian, that, Killian will be maybe your primary ball handler, but he won't necessarily be relied upon to finish the number of plays that you are necessarily expecting from the absolute top end offensive creators. And that then when you get into different defensive situations where if you're going up against an all wing switch everything unit, you have Ant Edwards then who would be able to sort of self-create out of nothing at all times. But yeah, I think that Ant has that self-creation ability. You're probably not going to want the ball in his hands too much on account of his decision-making issues. But what makes me more confident in him as a sort of 1B type guy is that I really like him as an off-ball player, that he has such a powerful cutter that he, you know, if you get him attacking downhill and force him to actually start going toward the rim, he's just such a powerful finisher with both hands, with incredible contortion and balance and vertical ability and ambidexterity, that he does have some passing that I think is interesting in those situations as well, like as an interior passer. I think that Ant just, he brings a lot as an off-ball scorer while also having that self-creation ability to fall back on. So I think that he kind of fits into that group of 1B on a great team.
I've got him at the top of my second tier, which we'll get into, because I view him as more complimentary and I have more worries about just the decision-making, and I just really worry about that wiring. And that's not to mention the defense, which he definitely has the tools to be a good on-ball defender, but I'm skeptical of the team defense ever being there. But, you know, since I think my tiers are less firm than you, like, I'd be okay with the team taking Ant above, you know, LaMelo or Killian if the situation is right. Like, I've said that I would take Ant for Golden State as, you know, my top option plenty of times, despite me having him a tier below these prospects. So I guess, like, a little different there because of our viewing on tiers. And just I have more concerns with Ant as, you know, really that 1B instead of maybe like a 2A, I think, is more of his ideal role. But I mean, I still view him as a very good prospect, a flawed prospect with plenty of upside and scoring talent and potential, but just not enough to make the first tier for me with LaMelo and Killian.
All right, so what's your second tier then?
My second tier is elite complementary pieces / like high upside complementary swings. So that would be, should I name them or?
No, I don't think it's.
Yeah, I don't need a name. It's like this is where like your Okoros, Vassells fall, like that type for me. Like those, we've talked about the complementary talent, the best of the complementary pieces to me, with a little bit of self creation upside on the tail end. Like I think someone like lower down, like Hira Lewis is like, or RJ Hampton is more fun to, or Patrick Williams doesn't really have the ceiling that someone like a Vassell or an Okoro has as, you know, an offensive creator. And it's, you know, with those two being so gifted, you know, just different levels defensively. And then, like I said, this is where someone like Anthony Edwards falls. And then I have, like, I think the main reason I delineate, you know, like high upside swings is because I have Poku at the end of this tier, who I definitely view as like a less traditional complimentary piece, because he's just so far away from really contributing. And, you know, I think just with someone, you know, as young as him, as big as him, as skilled and intelligent as him, but also as flawed as Poku, that it's hard to really know what his impact as a complimentary looks like. I can definitely like idealize what I think it should look like. Like I think as like a gunning wing type who, you know, takes off movement threes and runs secondary pick and rolls all the time and is a monster in transition. Like that's, I think, you know, looking through kind of a narrow lens at what he is now, like what I think he could be. But with someone like Poku, like I acknowledge that his development could unfold in ways that I don't expect. So that's why I kind of have him above other prospects out of this tier. And in this tier with the elite complementary talents, even if I don't believe he's, you know, really all that analogous to them.
Yeah, he's going to be in a lower tier for me, but I think that he fits the mold of elite complementary talent. As, like you said, a gunner off the move who's a team defense playmaker. I think he fits that mold, but he's not going to be in this tier for me. My second tier is a tier 1B, which is elite complementary talents. I view their high-end outcomes as decidedly not primary creators. They're going to be a 2 or 2B on a contending team. I think you'll never have an argument that this guy is the primary ball handler on his team, but I think they're so good at that secondary role that in a perfect scenario, like if you're Golden State, I could certainly see a case for reaching down to this tier to bypass those tier 1A guys. So I said in an optimal context, I would take these guys in the top 3, but I'm definitely comfortable taking them all in the top 7. I think that the toughest inclusion for me was the guy who's last in this tier for me in Onyeka Okongwu, just because I think that I sort of had to add these guys would be 2Bs on a great team qualifier for Onyeka. Like, I think if he's if he has a case for being your second best player, but is not clearly your second best player, you could be a very good team. But you know, anything more than that, I'm a little questionable, because I think you're probably looking at a guy who, again, has a case for being your best or most important defensive player, and then is you know, your third or fourth most important offensive player. And that's not amazing, but it's very valuable. And I think that just the fact of scarcity of these bigs who can actually maintain their value into high leverage situations, I think that's really in Onyeka's favor. And if you're just that perfect team that really has the creators to get to a championship level in place, and you need that big man who's going to enable you in late game situations, then Onyeka is highly valuable and was able to work his way into this tier for me. But definitely a tough inclusion, whereas I feel much more confident with the other three guys in this tier. This is such a small tier for me. I'll just say it's Okoro, Maxi, and Vassell, and Okongwu. I think that Onyeka is the lowest impact of these guys from just like a mathematical standpoint, but as worthwhile as these other guys from a team building standpoint.
Yeah, I have Onyeka at the top of my third tier, my tier 3A, just because, again, like, I certainly considered him and like have long considered him as a member of this tier, just being a big man who I think is like ultimately not special. Like, I just had a hard time really including him in this tier with the wings and like the really high level complimentary guard, I think. I certainly understand the inclusion of him, and it was definitely tough. I just view him as like less of an elite complimentary piece, because I mean, like you said, if he's like anything above like your third best player, unless you have like LeBron or someone of that ilk, I think it's tough to really win with him. But certainly like has scarce skills and is incredibly useful to a great team. And like I said, my tiers are more fluid. So like if you took Onyeka above someone in my second tier, like, you know, Poku, I certainly would understand if you need that covered versatile big man.
Yeah, I think I've just gotten to a point where I'm really a lot higher than most on this idea of coverage versatility and big men mattering a ton from a team building standpoint. And like, I don't think most teams should take Onyeka Okongwu this high necessarily. Unless you have nothing and you're like, okay, I'm just punting on trying to get that sort of star player this year, and I'm just going to load up for next year. But if you're a team that's like in a pretty good spot and has like some flawed but good creators, I don't love the idea of taking Onyeka. But if you've got that, you know, that perfect guy in place already, I think it makes a ton of sense, because I do think he's a really serious ceiling.
Which is a hard thing, because especially, you know, with this draft, there in Onyeka's range, there's like aren't a lot of teams that really fit that.
I mean, no, there aren't. You're probably looking at a trade up to get that sort of situation, because there aren't a lot of those situations. There aren't a lot of situations of a team that is in desperate need of that high leverage big man that is otherwise well equipped to play at the highest levels. There aren't that many of those teams.
All right, so we move on to our next tiers.
Sure, just one more thing on that tier. I think it's a particularly useful example of how like variability within the tiers works. That like I have both Vassell and Okoro in this tier. I've got Okoro fourth and Vassell sixth. But it's gonna vary wildly based on team and what you want to get out of that player. If you're looking for more of an on-ball stopper, 2 to 4, we'll say, then without a doubt your option is Okoro, especially if you're looking for a guy that you're going to involve in these downhill attacking situations. If you need a guy who brings a lot of rim pressure and brings a lot of foul drawing ability, you're absolutely going to want Okoro. But if you're looking for a guy to spot up and you're looking for a guy whose defensive value comes primarily as a team defender and not decidedly not a wing stopper, do not draft Devin Vassell if you want a wing stopper. Vassell is going to be your option. So it's going to vary a lot based on what you want as a team and what you're trying to do as a team. And that's kind of the point of the tier system.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the value of tiers. I mean, again, like I have Vassell third and like Okoro fourth or a core of fifth or something in the same tier. But again, like those are totally interchangeable based on team and based on what kind of player you're looking for. Because they're, you know, I think both of them have a case for, you know, being better than the other one, but they present different skill sets and different strengths and different weaknesses that, you know, different teams can compensate for. So.
All right, what's your third tier, Ben?
So this is where I have a 3A and a 3B, because it's a bigger tier that I didn't think was a difference enough to split up like into a whole new tier, but I definitely made a delineation halfway through. So 3A is my like good complementary bets, not elite complementary players like the ones we outlined, but good complementary players like I talked about my view of Onyeka or somebody like Cole Anthony, who I think.
So what ranks on your board does this spin?
Oh, this ranks from 8 to 22.
Oh, wow. But yeah. There's a division within that.
Yes, there is a division.
Okay, where's the division?
There is a division at 13. Okay. So 8 to 13 and 14 to 22 are the two like tiers within the tier.
Yeah, that's very similar to what I have.
Yeah, so but like I just didn't see enough of a gap to make a whole new tier, but I definitely could see it. Yeah, the good complementary bets, like the guys I really trust. We talked about the versatile complementary, you know, guards and forwards, like and Danny Patwell, Cole, and then Onyeka at the top, who I was again like very undecided about whether this tier or the above one. So that's my tier 3A. Those like strong complementary bets who require that necessary context more than the elite complementary bets above them to really succeed. Like Cole Anthony, who's going to require playing next to a bigger creator and being allowed to focus on, you know, pull up gravity, not being relied on to create with his lack of burst and intermediate game, but who could really succeed in a specific context. And then my tier 3B, which is, like I said, 14 through 20, are these kind of more floor, some of these like lower value to me, more floor raising complementary bets, like your Obi Toppin, James Wiseman types. And then like some more like swingy upside, like Bomaro and Isaiah Joe. As you know, again, like some complimentary, but I think have the upside to kind of outpace this tier, but also definitely have the downside to, you know, not be there. You know, if Joe can't add the necessary strength to survive in the NBA and make the most of his skills, if Bomaro doesn't develop any real, you know, offensive firepower. So that's kind of like the 3B part of this tier, which is 14 to 22 on my board.
Yeah, so my 2A is very good but flawed complementary talents, and my 2B is prohibitively flawed but situationally very valuable complementary talents. So the 2A runs from 8 to 13, 2B from 14 to 21. 2A, I'll start with, which again is very good but flawed complementary talents. High end, I think they're context-dependent plus starters, and I would comfortably take them in the back half of the lotto. So I view these guys as they're all put in a very good situation, highly valuable, but have some pretty damning flaws. So it's like Patrick Williams, his lateral mobility is not good.
Yeah.
Cole Anthony lacks bursts and his decision-making is really questionable. And he's a small guard. RJ defense, decision-making, currently finishing, shooting, Kyra finishing, and strength, you know, Denny shooting, creation ability, you know, all these guys, and Poku is in there as well for me. And you know, he has his consistency of technique and engagement level and you know, I mean, efficiency as a shooter and strength and all of these issues that these guys put in optimal situations, I think could really return a lot of value and be really nice ceiling raisers for a team. But they have to be put in those situations and they're always going to have constraints on them. That I don't view any of these guys as real franchise changers, though they are worthwhile team building pieces and ones that I do like quite a bit.
Yeah. But then how about you? Yeah. I mean, then, like I said, I mean, we should go with your like second part of that tier before.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. My 2B are prohibitively flawed, but situationally very valuable complementary talents. So I think that like, these are guys who perfectly optimized could rival or maybe even exceed some of the 2A guys in value, but they're, I think, a little harder to optimize and will just be faced with situations where they can't really play. And so that's kind of the idea, is the high end, that they're context dependent plus starters, but they're unable to play in some situations. So, you know, I think pretty obviously that someone like James Wiseman, that I think James Wiseman in regular season minutes, just playing a drop, could be a pretty valuable player, like a nice above average starting center who plays 30 minutes a game and impacts the game at a solid level as a rim runner and as a rim protector. But it's just, you know, it's going to come to situations where you can't be playing a drop. Like if you don't have guard defenders who are fighting over screens well enough, if you're just playing against a nuclear pull-up shooter, like there are going to be situations where James Wiseman just can't play. You know, this is where I have Tyrese Haliburton, Obi Toppin, all of these guys. I think they're going to run into situations where it's just not going to be viable to play them, even though in these perfect contexts that you can construct around them, they do return a lot of value. But I'd be comfortable taking these guys in that 10 to 20 range. Not huge investments. I get a little queasy about taking on those team building constraints, but you know, they can return value.
All right, so my fourth tier, let's get into that. I have my fourth tier is from 21 to 34, and it's solid average rotation bets slash potentially high leverage specialists. So we have, you know, at the top, like your Desmond Bain types, Malachi Flynn, who could be really useful rotation players, you know, with just awesome skills, but lack, I think, the ceiling to be really, you know, your two, three, even four best starters on a high leverage team. And then, you know, towards like the bottom or later this year, you know, I have someone like, you know, prospects like Aaron Nesmith, who I think of more as like a specialist, who, you know, struggles in a lot of areas, but the one, you know, the height plus movement shooting is incredibly valuable. And if it's correct, it's difficult to optimize, requires a lot of effort to optimize, but if it's optimized, could exceed the value of some of the guys higher in the tier, even in the tier above. So that's what this tier is for me.
Yeah, my next tier is strong rotational bets. So at the high end, they would be valuable rotation players. Low end situational starters, and thinking like, you know, based on matchup, this might be a guy that slides into your starting lineup. I'd spend a late first on these guys. Desmond Bain, Malachi Flynn, that type of guy, where they're, I feel confident in them. They're very good players. I think they're NBA guys, but not franchise changers, not a guy that I'm absolutely setting my heart on getting. You know, would be nice to have them. They're solid players. But this is where the end of the first round guys to me comes, and that's at 26 with Killian Tilly is the last guy in this tier for me. So yeah, I think that the talent does kind of run out with in terms of clear first round guys to me. Not wild about taking a lot more guys in that first round for most teams.
I didn't really delineate like clear first rounders, but I think it would also run out around like Jaden McDaniels or someone like that for me. Like again, like in the late first, like even like the back end of these guys, like Najee or Cassius Winston, who like I'm not like crazy excited about, but in the right situation, like. For the Lakers, I could see someone like Cassius Winston being incredibly useful. And then, for like a team that needs a mobility-based big, could see Najee being incredibly useful. So yeah, that is kind of where I fall in terms of like the first round talent. It's like, yes, I'm like crazy enthusiastic about taking someone like that in the first, but for a team that has, you know, the need and the context in place to optimize them, I think it's okay.
Yeah, so the difference there for me is that tier three, the strong rotational bets, are guys I would definitely take in the first.
Okay, so yeah. Whereas
my next tier is going to be guys I'd prefer to take in the early second, but in that optimal context,
I just didn't split that up, but.
Yeah, it's split for me. All right, should we call this part two?
Yeah, so this is part two of our final little board discussion. Thank you all for listening. As always, again, we'll plug that our live broadcast on Twitch on draft night, going to be lots of this and more discussion. Our final boards will be attached somewhere and live by the time you're listening to this, or if not soon after. With that, make sure to follow the pod at Prep2ProPod on Twitter. Follow Max at Max A. Carlin. Follow me at Ben_Pfeiffer_. And with that, we'll see you all next time.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.